So this evening, we're going to meet our animal soul. The character within us that the Tanya introduces right at the beginning in chapter one, that we have two souls. We have a divine soul and an animal soul. Tonight, we're going to meet our animal soul and get to know it a bit better. As we sit here, we are behaving ourselves. We're mostly civilized people. And as you interact during the day, you greet people, hello, how are you, good afternoon. You interact at work, in social settings, in home settings. We interact with people, and there's a certain civilized basic level of behavior that most people follow most of the time. Even as we're driving on the road, we drive, we indicate, we turn left, we turn right, we let people in sometimes into the lane, and we behave at a certain way. You reach a roundabout, you stop and give way to the people on your right, or the people who are already on the roundabout. That's the rules. That's how we do things. The red light means stop, the green light means go. When you're walking down the street, if you bump into somebody, excuse me, you move to the side if you're in the way. There's certain norms, etiquette, ways that we behave that make life pleasant and normal and comfortable. And most people that we bump into during the day behave according to those mores, according to those customs and traditions of being a mensch, a person. A mensch just means a person, ironically, in Yiddish, in German. A person, a decent person, just being a normal, decent person. This is how we are and how we function and how we try to behave most of the time. But during all of that, during the entire stretch of the day and wherever we are and whatever we're doing, while we are behaving in that civilized fashion, just beneath the surface, there is a wild animal that is ready to pounce, sometimes at very small provocation, and it can come out at any moment. For most people, most of the time, hopefully, that's not what's happening. We're behaving like a mensch. But sometimes, seemingly out of the blue, or sometimes for very good reason, something pokes us and we're transformed almost instantaneously into this uncontrollable animal. It's like there's a thin veneer of civilization, and just beneath the surface, there's this brute, this primal, animalistic self that can pop out at any moment. And there are different things that provoke different people. The example of being in traffic, that can sometimes do it to us, where you're driving and somebody cuts you off. Until now, you were driving like a mensch, and suddenly somebody cuts you off, and this fury comes out. How dare they? And you drive a bit aggressive, or you scream, you express your frustration in whatever way you can. And what was a nice person a few minutes ago has suddenly become this wild attacking animal. And it sometimes happens in conversation as well. You know, you're sitting having a conversation, particularly with people who are closer to you usually, rather than complete strangers. With strangers, we maintain the veneer much, much easier and much better. But when it's people who are close to you, I guess people who are close to you, first of all, press your buttons more because they matter to you more and what they say matters to you more. And they know you better and you know them, and there's a certain familiarity, and they'll say something, whether it be a little criticism, or pointing out something that you didn't want to be pointed out, or questioning you on something that you didn't think was any of their business, or bringing up something from the past that you were not interested in rehashing. Whatever it is, they say that little thing that presses your button, and whoosh, you flare up, you're angry, you can't handle this, and suddenly that polite person is gone, and there's a wild ox ready to gore. This is one form of the animal coming out. There are other forms of the animal coming out as well. When food appears, food can also arouse the animal. That some people have observed at Kiddush, in certain communities, that you have a group of people singing the prayers, opening the siddur, following the service, behaving quite in a quite elevated way, sometimes for an extended period. And it seems that these are people who are quite refined, quite on a high level, you know, to be able to sit and say prayers, stand, do the meditations and the beautiful service. Like, it's quite an evolved person, spiritually connected. Until the Kiddush comes out. And then all of a sudden, it's like a free-for-all. Like, who can get in? Who can pack their plate the most? And if that person gets it to the sushi before you, so then there's a nudge and a pull, and what's going on here? And that was my piece. And people who seemed refined 5 minutes ago are now like animals, you know, chomping at the bit. Like, what happened all of a sudden? The food came out, and that transformed us. It turned us into animals. There are other ways that this animal can appear, various different ways. And for each one of us, we have our particular animal, our particular type. For one, the sushi doesn't do it for you. There are other things that switch your animal on, that put you into that mode. Each one of us is slightly different, but we all have certain commonalities, a certain pattern. And this is what the Alter Rebbe in Tanya describes as the Nefesh HaBahamis, the animal soul. This is a driving force inside of you that it is totally you. It is your survival instinct. It's your drive to live. It's a necessary part of your personality, but left untrained, it is, after all, an animal, and it can get ugly. I mean, you need to eat. Hunger is an important thing. That's one of the urges of the animal soul, to eat. We need to eat. But if we just eat animalistically, so that can be a messy scene. So this animal can be trained. It can be directed. It can be refined. But that takes a lot of work. We're not born with a refined and trained animal. We're born with an animalistic animal that follows its instincts. Babies are not polite. They're not civilized at all. They have no control over their urges. When they're hungry or thirsty or tired or cold or dirty or whatever they are, they just scream. And some people claim they can identify what this cry means or what that cry means, maybe at certain stages, but it's generally a cry. This is what I want. I need something. I want something. I feel like something. Long before they can verbalize or even conceptualize in their mind, their desires are already there. For comfort, for food, for warmth, for love, for attention. Long before they have any concept of what these things are, a baby has those desires. That's innate. This is what I want. And there's no opportunity to explain that, yes, you'll get that desire in a minute. Just give me a minute. There's no context. There's no control. The animal just wants. That's how it is. As we grow and develop and mature, so we learn that you can't always have your desires fed immediately. Sometimes you have to hold your desire for something else or somebody else, and you'll get it later. And eventually we become mature where we understand that we can't get everything we want immediately. At least hopefully. Unfortunately, some people don't get that message in their upbringing, that you can't get what you want immediately, because maybe they did get what they wanted immediately. And they become the adults who still want everything immediately, and if it's not fed, they'll walk all over you. Because how can you not give me what I want? But if somebody is really trained, so then they can even reach a level where this animal inside becomes a partner to the divine self, that our physical needs can become elevated to the point where they themselves are an accessory to spirituality. Yes, you need to eat in order to have the strength to do more good in the world. You need to feed yourself, but that feeding is to give you the energy to be able to fulfill your mission. And so my urge for food is not an innately bad thing. That's my survival. It depends what I use it for. If it's just for myself, just to enjoy myself, to indulge, so then that is going to lead me to immorality. If indulging is what I'm all about, so I'll do whatever it takes to indulge. But if eating is about energizing me in order to fulfill my mission, that's a holy purpose. And that could be elevated. So what Tanya introduces us to is this animal, which at first glance is not bad, but it's an animal. If left to its own devices, it's going to get rough. It will stomp over anybody in its way. And if it's trained, it can be elevated and lifted to a higher place. Specifically, the Alter Rebbe in the first chapter of Tanya describes the animal soul as being our instinct for life, to live, that contains in it also our character, our ingrained natural character. Each one of us has a certain personality, a certain character, a certain makeup, that this is who we are. And that includes different traits that we have. Some of our ingrained natural traits are negative, some are positive. We're all born with certain proclivities, certain different styles of personality. And amongst that is a whole gamut. Some of those traits are negative. Some could be positive as well. There are people who are naturally kind and generous, as well as people who are naturally cruel and harmful to others. We all have a bit of everything. Some people stronger in this area, some people stronger in that area. But we're talking about our natural instinctive self. Just like an animal can display love and care and devotion and protection, animals can do that. So too, our animal could display very positive traits. But when an animal displays those traits, it is instinctive. It's not a conscious choice. Then the animal's not deciding to be nice. The animal's following its instincts, which include protection and love and care. But they can't change that to be different to their instincts. The animal cares for its young, for example. Most animals have an instinct to care for their young. But that only extends to their own young, and only extends for a certain amount of time. And then it's gone, that instinct. To care for somebody else, or to care for the young when they've grown up, Some animals don't have that instinct. They're just not there. They can't change that. So, yes, they're doing an act of caring and kindness, but it's not a conscious act of caring. It's an instinctive act. So too, we all have certain instinctive positive traits that we do that are nice and good, but they're just our nature. And that, Tanya says, is not bad, but it's not yet good. Goodness has to be conscious, has to be a choice, has to be something you're doing not because your instinct tells you, but because it's right, that you made a conscious decision to do it. And so our animal soul, even the good side of our animal soul, needs to be elevated to a higher place where we're not just doing good because it feels good to us or natural to us, but we're doing good as a conscious act. And our negative side, our negative traits that are natural, are there to be transformed. Many people, many times we excuse our behavior by saying, I was born this way. This is my nature. I'm sorry, I just naturally am a person that is impatient, and this is how I've always been, and so I'm impatient towards you. Well, that's who I am. I'm an impatient person. That may be true. You may have been born impatient. That may be one of the traits that is naturally ingrained inside of you. That's your mission, to work on that, to transform that, to elevate it. That's what we're here for. We're given a nature to overcome, to turn it around, to utilize it for holy. And so the Alter Rebbe in the first chapter of Tanya spells out the traits of our animal soul, and he puts them into four categories that correspond to the four elements of creation: fire, water, air, and earth. Based on a principle written in Kabbalistic works, that everything in the universe is made up of these four. The entire universe is made up of the four elements of fire, water, air, and earth. Both physically, every physical object is made up of these four elements, and also spiritually, every spiritual experience, every reality, even in the metaphysical world, has these four elements. Now, on the physical plane, what it means, well, fire is heat, water is coolness, air is gaseousness, and earth is physicality, coarse physicality. And so everything in the world has a combination of those four in various levels. But our preoccupation is not the physical world for now, and how these four elements are expressed in the physical world. Our preoccupation is how they're expressed in our spiritual makeup. We have fire, water, air, and earth inside of us that make up our personality. And specifically talking about the animal soul has different character traits that are associated with these four elements. He starts off with fire, the element of fire in our animal soul. What are the traits that are associated with fire? Tanya says, the traits of arrogance and anger are expressions of the element of fire in our animal soul. Arrogance and anger. How so? The language he's using is metaphorical. We're not talking about fire burning in our soul. We're talking about the concept of fire in our soul, the spiritual version of fire in our soul. The physical attributes of fire are a manifestation of a spiritual reality called fire. And so we can look at physical fire and its attributes and extrapolate from that what is the fire in our soul. So if fire, what is fire? Fire is heat, warmth. It's a consuming thing. It eats up whatever it's burning. And it's always going upwards. fire is reaching upwards, lifting itself up, spreading itself as far as it can go. So those attributes are reflected in our personality. There's a fire in our personality. And in the animal soul, that's expressed as arrogance and anger. Do you see that? Do you see how arrogance and anger are fire? In what way is arrogance fire?
It's the fuel that causes the person to be angry.
It's a fuel that causes anger. What is? Arrogance. So the connection between arrogance and anger, we can see where that's true, and we'll look at that in a second. Where is arrogance an expression of fire? Before we get to anger.
So like fire doesn't care about anything and just go and destroy everything. An arrogant person similarly don't care about others.
Right. That fire just spreads itself and eats up whatever is in its way without any concern whatsoever for anything else. It just asserts itself everywhere, spreads everywhere. Which is what arrogance is. Arrogance is where you fill all of existence and walk all over anybody else. You just, they don't really exist as real beings. And an arrogant person, it's all about them. And so they spread themselves everywhere. Like the story they say of the Baal Shem Tov, somebody complained to the Baal Shem Tov that when he goes to shul, he says, everyone walks all over me. Like, people don't respect me. And when he goes to the community, to the shul, he says he feels he's not respected. People are just walking all over me. So Baal Shem Tov said to him, if you spread yourself over the entire shul, no one has any choice but to walk all over you. In other words, when you're so arrogant, when you're so self-centered, everything anyone says is about you. And so you take it personally. You walk into a room, an arrogant person walks into a room, and every facial expression of any person that was insulting me, they meant me. Somebody walks out and say, see, as soon as I walk in, they walk out. Somebody who said good morning, but the way they said it, it didn't seem fully sincere. So everything's about me. By the way, when we're talking about arrogant people, we're talking about ourselves. There are arrogant people who are like, that's an arrogant person. But here we're talking about the arrogance that we all have on some level. Even when we give extreme illustrations of it, maybe I'm not that bad, but we all have this. We can all relate to it on some level, if we're honest. In a crazy way, we do think that everybody is thinking about us. When we walk into a room, everyone's looking at us. We are the center of everyone's attention. On some level, we do think that way. As ridiculous as that is, if we stop and think. Like, you walk into a room, people care, people notice, hopefully that's nice. You know, like, you're not the center of the world, the center of the universe. But in our minds, we are. There's a certain arrogance that our animal soul has that we spread all around the room as if it's my life. It's not your life. It's my life that you are in, and you're stepping on my life. You're getting in my way. That's why an arrogant person, which again is all of us on some level, we do see other people as a threat. Like, you're in my way. Because it's all my way. It's all me. I'm everywhere, like the fire that spreads everywhere. It's all me. And so anything you do is taking up a bit of my space. Any success you have, any achievement you have, anything you get right, that's what I was supposed to get. Because I'm everywhere. That is arrogance, which is like fire. It rises up like a fire and spreads everywhere and eats up everything and is willing to destroy anything that gets in its way. Which leads to anger, like you correctly said. That anger, we can see why anger is fire. Because when you get angry, you feel the fire burning in you. You feel the heat, the blood rushes, and it's a palpable fire inside you, which is uncontrollable, like a fire that just goes out of control. When we reach a state of anger, we do and say things that we later regret and we can't believe. And even at the time, sometimes you know you shouldn't be doing it and you can't control it. It overtakes you, like a fire that completely rages. The true source of anger is arrogance. The place that anger really comes from is arrogance. I'm angry because things are not going my way. Things are happening out of my control. People are doing things that I did not want them to do, that was not my plan. So I'm furious. Which, of course, when we break it down like that, it sounds absolutely ridiculous. What, like, I'm like some puppeteer that is just controlling everybody around me, that they should do and say and behave like I want? Of course not. But our arrogance says that. That this is my show. You're the extras in my show. And so you should be playing to my script. And when you don't, I'm furious. Because you got in my way. You're stepping on me. Me. Do you know who you're stepping on? Do you know whose way you're getting in? It's me. I'm the center of the universe. And you dare to defy me. That's what it really is if we break it down. Back to the road rage. When you're driving, somebody cuts in front of you. Where does the anger come from? What am I angry about? How dare you cut in front of me? Like you're pushing me out of the way. This is my road. What else is it? I mean, you're angry at their driving skills. They're driving unsafely, so that gets you angry. It's that you dared to get in my way. You made me feel like I'm not in power. If we would have no arrogance, then we would have no anger. Meanwhile, we have arrogance. We have this as a part of our animal soul. Until we've refined that element, so we have a certain level of arrogance. And so, according to how arrogant we are, will be how much anger we experience. Now, of course, that will also depend on a person's makeup. Some people are quick to anger. They reach there much quicker. Some people are very arrogant, but they don't get angry so quickly. Some people are so arrogant that their arrogance doesn't allow them to express anger. It would look like I'm losing it. I'm losing control. The arrogance might even slow down their anger. But we all have it. We all have it on some level. Now again, saying we all have it and saying that we have it in our animal soul does not excuse it. It doesn't justify it. This is what we're here to work on. We're here to work on our arrogance and our anger. And the best way to do it is go to the source. The source of the anger is arrogance. So if we work on humility, on that it's not all about me and I'm not the center and I'm not in control, all I can be in control of is myself, my responses, my inner world. I can't control the external world. The more we engender that attitude, then the more we can go with, okay, this is what's happening now. I didn't decide. It's not up to me. I need to deal with this situation as it is. We give the people around us the freedom to be autonomous beings. Like, you're not my puppet. I can't control you. I can only do my bit, and then you got to do your bit. You have free choice. So these are the first attributes of the animal soul that are expressions of the fire in the soul. Fire leads to our arrogance and our anger. The next set of attributes is water. Water is the opposite of fire. So water in Tanya quotes an earlier work of Kabbalah, the Shara Kedusha, by Rabbi Chaim Vital, student of the Arizal, that says that water irrigates all pleasures of the world. And therefore water is the source of hedonism, of pleasure seeking in the soul. Meaning, moisture is what causes things to grow. The difference between a desert and a beautiful garden is water. That where there's water, there can be growth. There can be a beautiful pleasure garden where there's water to irrigate. Where there's no water, you have dry desert that cannot be enjoyed. So all pleasures are irrigated by water, by moisture. And so therefore, water in the soul is our pleasure-seeking, our hedonism, our desire to increase pleasure and enjoyment. The Kabbalists always associated water with love. That water spreads and connects. Unlike fire, which pulls apart and destroys, water gives life and connects. And so water, in its positive sense, is the power of love. The animalistic version of that is loving myself and loving, giving myself pleasure. That wanting to increase my own enjoyment and pleasure. And so not love in the sense of giving and a relationship, but love in the sense of pleasure seeking. And so here as well, the animal soul, the version of love of the animal soul is that really, out of love of self, whatever increases my enjoyment, I love. I will love a person if that person gives me pleasure. If I get no pleasure from the relationship, so then there's no love. What do I need you for? As long as you're serving me, so then good. If you're not serving me, so then I have no need for you. Because the animal soul is innately self-absorbed, so its power of love is also completely self-absorbed. And we do see in the animal kingdom relationships, they do have relationships, but those relationships are either instinctive or they're somehow self-serving. They can team up. And people can do this as well. We can team up with somebody. I'll give to you as long as I know I'm getting something in return, so then maybe it's worth it for me to give to you. But if I get nothing in return, so there's no deal. I'm willing to give up some things if it's worth it, if the return is worth it. But if it's not worth it, then there's no point. That's our animalistic love, as opposed to the elevated form of love, which is selfless, loving for pure intentions, just to give without expecting anything in return, that the animal soul innately is not capable of. So some of us may be more fiery in our personality, more towards the side of arrogance and anger. Others are more watery in our personality, more pleasure-seeking. We all have both, and each one of us tends one way or the other. Then there's the third category, which is ruach in Hebrew, air. Out of the four elements, air is the least physical. It's got the least physical presence. And in our animal soul, the attribute of air expresses itself in traits such as cynicism, emptiness, wasting time, like making nothing out of your life, a big vacuous bubble of air. There are certain tendencies we have to make light of things and tend towards emptiness, which is air, a lot of hot air. Cynicism is that. What is a real cynic? A real cynic is a person who can take the most serious situation and dismiss it as nothing. They can take the strongest argument and not give a counter argument, but just make a face or make a snide remark and just dismiss it as it's gone. It's nothing. That is the attribute of air that we have in it, a negative trait that can make nothing out of something, belittle things into thin air. It can be just with a shrug of the shoulders. Yeah. Somebody comes to you with an earnest plea, they need your help, or they want you to do something, they come with a good case, and you just go, whatever. Dismiss it just like that. It's not that you proved them wrong or that you came up with some other opinion, just dismissed. Yeah, letzanut means cynicism, making fun. You're making a joke out of it. Yeah. Somebody can, with one little smart remark, pulls the carpet out from under everything. Makes light of it. So that's the attribute of air, because there's no substance to it. There's nothing to it. It's just making nothing. Time wasting is the same thing. Some an art that we've developed very to a very fine art these days, to fill your day with nothing. It's incredible how busy we can be these days, doing absolutely nothing, but we feel incredibly busy and fulfilled. It's like all these tabs are open, you know, and all these things are happening, and we're keeping up with everything, and we feel it's important. There's a whole industry of making air, emptiness, feel really important, and that you've achieved a lot. I've checked so many things. I'm up to date with so many things now, and it's only 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I've already been around the entire world, caught up with the Israel news and what's going on in America and Ukraine, and I'm looking after so much. It's important. I've got to do this. It won't happen without me. And it's all thin air. Like it's actually nothing. And we're too busy. We're really busy. I've got a lot on. But so much of it is this puffed up air, you know, like those bags of chips that, like, you open it, there's just a few chips at the bottom, and there's all this air, but it's a full bag. So our whole day, we were so busy running around doing so many things. When we actually make a calculation of the day, like what we're busy with, it's some hot air, there's a bit of hot air there. This is something that these industries that are playing on this inside of us, they get it, that there's a part of our animal soul that enjoys time wasting, like passing the time, like that I didn't have to face anything real at that time. I didn't have to challenge myself or do something meaningful, or bring something deeper out of myself, or achieve something real. Like, that's what life is really about. Real connections, to actually really connect with people, which is challenging and difficult. That means I have to question things in myself and work on myself. And, you know, that's the real stuff. But instead, I can do a vacuous version of it where I'm in touch with so many people. In touch, but not connecting. It's a part of our animal soul that settles for that emptiness. It's happy to feel puffed up. The day is puffed up with all this puffing, that it's actually empty. So our element of air in our animal soul is that tendency towards emptiness, to cynically dismiss things that are serious and important, and to let the time just fly by in thin air. And then finally, the final element is the element of earth. If air is the most ethereal, non-physical of the elements, earth is the most physical and concrete of the elements. And in our animal soul, the expression of the element of earth is the heaviness, the heavy part of our animal soul, which is expressed in laziness, sluggishness, and darker negative emotions of feeling sad and despondent That's the heaviness of the animal soul. There's a part of us that would just be happy not to move, to just sit there and not have to move at all, not have to do anything. This is even different to the emptiness. This is complete lethargy, inertia. I just want to stay where I am and don't even want to get up in the morning. That's a heavier level of our animal soul. That's the earth that just wants to stay put. Doesn't want any movement. It's a self-destructive voice inside of us that just can't be bothered with anything. It's the part of us where our feelings become numb. Our heart becomes like stone. Like we're just not responsive to anything. And so it's expressed in a form of laziness. Can't be bothered. But its source is a darkness of the heart, where we've gone into like a space of despondence, of giving up, a sinking feeling. That's the earth, the element of earth in our soul. So in the course of a day, we could experience all four of these elements at different moments and in different frequencies and levels. Our animal soul is always ready to pounce. And so at any weak moment where we're not attentive to what we're doing, we're not making conscious decisions and thinking about what's my next move, what should I be doing now, when we're not on top of ourselves, which it's not easy to be. The animal soul is always ready to come with a very instinctive feeling or sense or emotion that will draw us to one of these things. Whether it be that sense of arrogance that I'm filling the space, anger at anything that gets in my way, a desire just for pleasure, retail therapy, or binge eating, or a self-absorbed type of relationship, to just dismiss, waste time, fill our time with meaningless pursuits, or to just sit there, to not move at all. And what Tanya is trying to do by identifying these things is to give us the language to understand where these are coming from. This is coming from a challenging part of your makeup that you've been given. This is your mission. This is what you're here to work on. On all four levels, in whatever form they take, however they express themselves, this is what you're here to transform, to train. If we were indeed just an animal, so then we can't help it. This is our instinct. This is who we are. But we're not. We're a person, a human being that has another soul, a divine soul, that can train, lift, elevate, and refine the animal soul and overcome the negative traits and even turn them around to good. See, interestingly, animals don't go through this stuff, not nearly to the same extent as we do. They have their instincts. Animals have their instincts, and they seem to work. They seem to work for them. that the animal does what it's supposed to do. We don't see animals going through midlife crises or getting involved with relationships that they really shouldn't be getting involved in, or having personality clashes. They don't seem to have those issues to the same extent, unless we just don't understand their language. Maybe they do. But it seems that the animal kingdom manages. They get what they need to do done. Whereas the human being, we're complicated. We have that animal side, and our instincts can be much uglier than any animal's instincts. The most violent attack that an animal could ever commit is following its instincts and doing what it's programmed to do. But a person, the damage we can do, it's so much worse. On the other hand, the kindest act that an animal can do is also just following its instincts, doing what it's programmed to do. Whereas a human being, the beauty that we're capable of, the altruism, the kindness, the generosity, the consideration, the compassion, that we can achieve, that no animal can reach. And so when we take our animal and we look at it and we say, okay, I've got these four elements. I've got this fire that expresses itself as arrogance and anger. But what if I turned it around and made that into a passion? Into an energetic passion for good. Not for my own self-aggrandizement. Not a self-absorbed thing, but a fire to enlighten the world, to bring light and warmth to the world. What if I took my water, my hedonistic urges, and turned that around into a water of love, of pure love, of selfless love? What if I took my air, my element of air, and utilized that not to dismiss or to waste time, but I utilized that as a force of humility, that I didn't take myself so seriously. I take others seriously and not myself so seriously. Air is humble. It's transparent. What if I take the element of earth, and instead of that being this inert force dragging me down, maybe earth can be my grounding. Taking my other traits and grounding them in the here and now. Not being so airy-fairy, but like being grounded in the earth. Making sure that the ideals that I have are actually expressed in reality. I can take my four elements and I can bring them and elevate them. My animal soul can be trained to become a partner to the divine soul. So let's spend a few moments just contemplating that a little bit. Trying to identify within ourselves these four elements. You can do this, again, with your eyes open or closed, but just get into a bit of a relaxed zone where after meeting our animal soul, talking about it, we want to try and feel it a little bit, but a bit from a distance. We're going to observe our animal soul, find it within ourselves, that as we sit here, behaving nicely and civilized. But we know that under the surface, we do have this animal. Let's not get into the animal, let's just observe it from above. that we know inside us there is a fire of the animal soul. That's the part of us that can spread ourselves arrogantly, taking up all the space. It can also burn with anger. We can get angry. We recognize it, we acknowledge it, we know this is a part of our makeup. We can be arrogant and self-absorbed. We can be angry and feel that everyone's stepping on us because of our arrogance. We also have a water element, very different to the fire. Move away from the fire and head towards the water inside you. This flowing stream is always looking for pleasure, for enjoyment, for indulgence. Because this is an expression of the animal soul, so it is also self-absorbed. It's about enjoying myself for myself, which may seem harmless, but when we're too self-absorbed, so that water element just flows and flows, it's never enough. So then, next to our water, we've got our fire and our water. Then there's our air element. It's a big, vacuous hole, emptiness. Our ability to waste a lot of time. Or to not take things seriously that should be taken seriously. And then there's our earth, the heavy, heavy dirt, the darkness that pulls us down, stops us from moving, drags us into inertia, laziness, despondency. We feel heavy. So now we're just observing these four elements that are down there inside us. As we go through our day, those four elements are all just beneath the surface. We can control them if we're on the ball. But they can control us if we let go of the reins. They can jump out. When we're calm and directed, so then We can hold back these four elements. When we're off guard, not being careful, they can jump out. Think about which of these four elements you most identify with. You feel this is your area that needs the most work. And think, what are the triggers? What are the signs that I'm heading into my fire or my water, my air or my earth? What are the things that lead me to that? Or the buttons that are pressed that bring that out? And how will I try to redirect it next time? Just hold it off, delay it, not get into that state. But just hold my animal at bay to make a better, more conscious decision of how to respond. I'm not going to completely get rid of my animal, but I can take one step to training it. So feel the strength that you have to do that. And resolve to try at least once in the coming days to respond from a deeper place, a holier place, your divine place, rather than the animal. Ready, you can come back.